session number 29549, Mr. John McGrath for Golf Reel 6. Now, could you tell us about the trip home? I don't think you remember the name of the ship, but anything about the trip home? You seem to have gone late November, you got back to Liverpool on 10th of December, 43.
No, nothing outstanding reminds me of the trip, so it must have been no problem for us. In fact, in all the convoys I've been, in the convoy out and the convoy back, I don't remember any problem at all. So it was just a straightforward 7 or 8 or perhaps 9 day trip to get back to the UK. We landed at Liverpool.
Now, then you're posted in January 1944, and this is where things really start. You're posted to C Squadron, number 2 wing. Does that make sense, Glider Pilot Regiment?
Yes.
Is that the name of the unit you were posted to?
That's it.
And that was at Tarrant Rushton, is that correct?
Tarrant Rushton near Blandford and Dorset, yes.
Now, there you met another new aircraft. Now, we're very interested in this. I don't think I've interviewed anyone, because you were flying Hamilcars with them.
Yes, the Hamilcar, which was the only, interestingly enough, was the only Allied aircraft during the war which carried a tank. It happened to be the Hamilcar glider.
Now, what was it like to fly? Because it seems incredible to a lot of people that a glider could carry a tank. Explain what the Hamilcar was like to fly and how it worked.
Well, the nose of the aircraft swung open, and the tank was driven in by the tank crew and chained in. And the weight of the tank was about 7 tons, a tetrarch light tank, 7 tons, was chained in.
It was a tetrarch?
T-E-T-R-A-C-H, tetrarch tank.
What was that armed with? What type of a tank was it? I don't know the tetrarch.
No, I can't remember what, because it wasn't our business to operate it. It was operated by Royal Tank Regiment personnel, you see. We were just the people who carried it.
Now, what was it like to fly?
The first thing, the cockpit in the Hamilcar was very, very cramped. And to gain access to the cockpit, you went into the inside of the tank, climbed up a ladder up the side of the tank.
The tank?
Sorry, beg your pardon. To gain access to the crew compartment, you had to enter the glider, climb a ladder, exit at the wing route, walk along the wing route to the tandem cockpit. Instead of being side by side with plenty of room like the horse, it was very, very cramped. And it wasn't side by side, as I said, it was in tandem, one behind the other. There were very, very little room, we were right on top of the tank. An interesting thing about the Hamilcar was the wingspan was greater than the aircraft that towed it, greater than the Halifax. It got a slightly larger wingspan. It was a massive aircraft.
Did it have to be towed by the Halifax?
In our squadron, it was towed by the Mark 6 Halifax, which is a specially adapted Mark. I don't know what adaptation was made to the Halifax to enable the tow, because it was a massive load to tow. And you had to be in an aerodrome with a very long runway, because it took more than the normal distance to get airborne because of the weight it was carrying.
Now, what was it like to fly? Can you give us an idea of what taking off and flying one of these things was?
Well, you seem to be rolling down the runway forever compared to the quick take off the hawser. But we were always airborne before the tug aircraft. With the Hamilcar, when you're airborne, the same rules apply, strictly straight behind in line with the tug, not to either side and not too high above. The Hamilcar tended to wallow a bit until the tug got airborne, and we got increased speed, which stabilised it better. There was more airflow over the wings the faster you went. But when you got off initially, it tended to wallow a bit, and you had to be very, very careful not to let it veer out of position. And otherwise, everything was just the same as flying the Hotspur or the The hammer car.
Was it not heavier under the control? I mean, did it respond to the control?
Yes, it was like the horse, which was a marvellous little, marvellous glider. The hammer car was exactly the same. Very, very easy to control and very, very easy to fly. The only thing, it was larger.
Now, you then start training with these, I presume?
Yes. We started training then. For the next 6 or 7 months, we were training.
Now, what do you remember of that training process?
A very intensive training program, not only flying training, but as I said, referred to a military role earlier on. When we were unable to fly for any reason, we indulged in military exercises, still keeping up the military side of our profession.
Now, you wanted to emphasise this, you feel you didn't emphasise enough yesterday. Tell us this business, you were an all-round soldier as well. Just if you want to go, to explain that to us now.
Well, we were fully qualified infantrymen as well as pilots. So when we came on the ground, we could take a part whenever in the fighting, any action was required, or we were able to do it. So that was the reason we were trained in the use of various weapons and kept our military skills up to standard by constantly practicing them.
Now, some of the exercises that we haven't discussed, you're doing a lot of stuff we've already discussed.
Yeah.
Just with the Hamel car instead of the other gliders. Yeah. But two things you seem to have done that are new are mass takeoffs. Now, would you like to explain how you did a mass takeoff, if you can?
Well, a mass takeoff, as the name indicates, is where you got a number of a combination, when I speak about a combination, I refer to a tug and a glider. That's a combination. And you've got a number of combinations flying together and getting off the ground as quickly as possible. The gliders were parked one behind the other, and the tug aircraft were parked on the perimeter by the side of them, on either side of them. One aircraft would take up, pull the glider off. Then as soon as it was free, the one coming from the other side pulled the next glider off and so on. From each side of the runway, the first tug would pull the glider off, then the tug on the other side would pull the second one off, revert to the other side again, the third one, and so you went on. And then follow each other down the runway, take off as quick as possible and form it together in the air.
Now, what was it like, formation? Did you fly in formation after these mass takeoffs?
No, not very loose formation, not like when they speak of formation, people think of the Red Arrows, but we were very loosely. We're en masse rather than a formation, en masse.
So how far would you be from the nearest one, roughly?
Oh, you might be, now let me see the moment, you might be, perhaps a dozen glider lengths away from.
So a good distance.
A good distance away,
did
yeah.
Did you practice mass landings? Because I can't see anything about that, but I presume you did.
Oh, we had a mass takeoff and then we'd fly to the selected airfield we were going to land on, and we landed one after the other as quickly as possible.
And what was a mass landing like?
Well, you had to be very, very observant because the gliders are coming to the side of you, some below you, some on top of you. So you had to make sure all the time, and that was the second pilot's job, to look out and see if there were any gliders coming to you from different directions. Otherwise, it was just a normal landing. But you had to be very, very careful, rather than when you were flying solo.
Would aircraft get damaged in this kind of exercise?
I've never known one damage.
The gliders, they wouldn't?
No, not at all. In my experience, I never knew one get damaged, no.
Now, what about spot landing exercises? What was that? It's fairly obvious, I think, from the server. What was a spot landing exercise?
Well, they put a yellow mark across in a certain part of the airfield, and you were told to land as touched on as near as possible to that spot. In other words, practicing getting precision landings. That was a good way of practicing. Practicing precision landings, you got used to touching down at a designated spot because we've practiced it so often.
Now, Anything else you remember about your time there? There's a couple of accidents that are quite interesting. I don't know whether these could take place before or after D-Day. I think they're before D-Day, but you don't go on D-Day. We'll come to that. But there's one where there was an accident and a tank came out of the Hamilcar.
Yes, it wasn't. It wasn't not in my time. I can't remember that. But I know what actually happened is quite true. There was a misjudgment made by the glider pilot, and the Hamilcar ran into a building, and the tank burst through the front door of the glider.
But you didn't see it?
No, I didn't see it.
Ignore that one. Yeah. What about this time when you had trouble with your port wing?
Oh, yes, that was interesting. It was a normal flying, and flying the Hamilcar went down the runway. I was, myself and my co-pilot, everything was fine. And I was flying during the takeoff. When I got airborne, the port wing dropped alarmingly.
Now, why?
This I don't know. Whether something went wrong with the rigging of the wing, the controls of the wing, I don't know whether it dropped. So I immediately, of course, the tug knew about it because the rear gun of the aircraft, of the towing aircraft, I could hear him reporting to his pilot saying, the glider has one wing low. So we had to abandon what we were going to do, just fly around, get enough height and come in and land. And I was very, 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 very peculiar because it came in, landing with one wing very, very low, and I thought, I'm not going to be able to land because the wing tip will hit the runway with somersault. But by a massive effort, just at the last moment, Providence made everything come right. The wing just assumed its normal shape, it was a normal landing. Fortunately, no damage or no injury. There obviously was an inquiry after as to why the wing dropped, but I don't know the result of that. It didn't concern me.
That you also got a second pilot to form a permanent crew. Now tell me about your second pilot and about what was the job of the second pilot?
The second pilot was a trained glider pilot, but not trained to the standard we had been as first pilots. His turn would come when he got enough experience flying, he would be promoted to second pilot, to first pilot. The first pilot was a staff sergeant. The second pilot was always a sergeant. So I was a staff sergeant, my second pilot was a sergeant.
Now who did you pick, or did he pick you? How did you get your...
We had an intake of second pilots. And rather than detail, the officers detail and say you will fly with him or he will fly with you, they left us to sort our own second pilots out. We met in the sergeant's mess. They'll talk together, and then if you fancied somebody or you liked to look on, you thought you could make friends, would you like to be my second pilot? And I picked Chaim Waltag, a first generation Polish Jew.
What was his first name?
Chaim, H-Y-A-M. Chaim Waltag, W-O-L-T-A-G. He was the son of Polish immigrants to Britain from London.
Why did you pick him? What was he like?
Well, he was a showman, very exuberant. He'd have made a good stage actor. Very exuberant, very, very bubbly sort of character. I liked his character and the joke and the laugh and just a good personality. Apart from that, I didn't know anything else at all about him. I did know that he trained at RAF Booker on the Tiger Moth. And he eventually went in through the hospital and came on, and the horse and came to me as my second pilot in the Hamilcar.
So what would he actually do?
Well,
Would he fly the plane ever, or would you fly? Would you take off and land it? Would he fly? Well, or did he just sit there with you?
Oh no, he was there with me all the time. But I took off when we've been flying for three or four times, I'd allow him to take off because my job was to teach them what to look out for and what the peculiarities of any of the glider were. And it was my job to pass this information on to him and see that he was able to absorb it. So you just pass your expertise on to him, you see, slowly.
Was he a good pilot?
Wally was quite a good pilot. I had no problems with him at all. No problems. We never had any dangerous moment as far as I can remember.
Now, you got promoted to staff sergeant. Did that make a difference?
Yeah, well, when I became a first pilot, I became a staff sergeant.
And was there any other difference, or was it just much of a
No other difference. It's just when your colleagues saw you, once they saw the crown over your three stripes, they knew you were a first pilot, you see, because you were a staff sergeant.
Now, what about the sergeant's mess? We haven't talked about that at all. What was the sergeant's mess like at Tarrabrush?
Absolutely marvellous. We were on the aerodrome with 644 Squadron of the Royal Air Force, a Halifax squadron, and we shared the sergeant's mess with them. And there was plenty of singing and drinking and joking and fooling around, because especially the RAF 644 Squadron, some of them men were flying agents into France. So they never knew it was going to be the last time they ever see the mess. They never knew if they were coming back again. They did all sorts of duties apart from towing gliders. And so it was a very, very lively, very, very lively place.
Did you drink much?
Not at all. I've had my moments, but it's never been the vice of mine, never.
So you just drink socially? Still?
Socially.
Now, anything else? There's this exercise you do at Bradbury Rings. What was that exercise? That seems to be an infantry exercise. Tell us about that.
Well, just outside the perimeter of RAF Tarrabrush near Wimborne and Dorset is located Bradbury Rings, an ancient British hill fort, which stands out high above the rest of the fairly flat countryside. And we used to do exercise there. Used to do military training on Bradbury Rings, and used to do field cooking on Bradbury Rings, and exercise around it, climbing it, doing various types of military exercise around the rings. We got very, very fond of Bradbury Rings.
It's a sort of evocative site for it, wasn't it?
Yes. Can you switch off a moment? About my wife. Yes, some years after the war, my late wife and I and my youngest daughter were travelling in the area of Wimborne Minster. As we came out of Wimborne Minster and were right hand side, I could see Bradbury Rings. I said to Connie and my daughter, I said, I used to exercise on these on this hill fort when I was a young soldier at RAF station down the road. So we stopped the car, walked to the top of Bradbury Rings, and we looked over the side of what was used to be RAF Tarrabrush, now given back to agriculture. It was a beautiful spring day. The birds were singing, but apart from the birds, there wasn't a bit of noise. And probably Connie and Jane, my daughter, could not hear, but I could hear the aircraft towing gliders. I could hear the Halifax engine, and in my mind's eye I could see them flying all around. I could see them, of course they didn't, and it was very, very nostalgic.
Okay, that gives us a nice idea of how you feel about that location. So, now, what about, now D-Day is coming. Did you do any special training for D-Day, even though you weren't going to be on it? Because you didn't know you weren't going to be on it. Can you explain what happened with D-Day?
Well, again, I was still a Tarrabrushian at the time, and crews were selected who were going to go on D-Day. We were not told whether we were going to go or not, but we guess we weren't, because the crews who were going to go on D-Day did extra flying duties, particularly spot landings and various exercises, and we guessed that we weren't going to go. We didn't query why we were not going to go, but I found out afterwards that the idea was that roughly half of the squadron would go on D-Day. The rest would remain there at Tarnbrushan to reinforce the landing if it was necessary. But due to the success of the invasion, it was decided not to send any more Gladstone troops in there. They weren't needed, so we missed out.
How did you feel about missing out? I mean, were you relieved or were you sad, or what
did
you feel?
Well, we were all very a bit disappointed because we were young and full of enthusiasm. We wanted to practice our skills and perhaps have a bit of action, but it just didn't happen for me.
Did you lose any friends in the D-Day operation? Because they did suffer casualties, didn't they?
Yes. None of my particular friends I can remember. We did lose some of the crew members, but you tended to just stay with your own past four or five particular friends, and you never bothered you never mixed it up with the others. You knew they were there, but that was it. I didn't lose any friends as far as I can remember.
Now, Ben, there's lots of operations scheduled and then cancelled.
Oh, yes, there were literally dozens of various operations. One in particular, remember, there was an operation which we were all going to go on to land near the Forest Rambouillet outside of Paris. And I forget what the operation was. Another one, we're going to fly down. Can switch off a moment, please? Yeah. Another operation we planned, but was never put into operation, was to take a glider-borne troops and land near the village of Everisi, south of Caen. And our objective was to take out the headquarters, a large house which we understood was the headquarters of the local Gestapo. But of course that was cancelled. The one at Rambouillet was cancelled and various others were cancelled. So we never went in any of them. Because the invasion went better than they thought.
So what happened next then? You're on leave next week. What happened there? You went on leave to Dunoon.
Oh, yes. Yes, my brother, Terence, he was a private soldier in the Royal Army Service Corps at Dunoon in Scotland. And he was in what they call a waterborne company of the Royal Army Service Corps, where they operated boats. So when I was on leave, I decided I'd like to go and see him. It didn't cost me anything to go. I got a free pass. So I went on the overnight train from Euston to Glasgow, and then made my way to Dunoon, and met him, and I was accommodated at Dunoon by the Royal Army Service Corps personnel. They put me up. And I'd only been there a short time, and received a recall telegram report to you as soon as possible. So I had to leave him and go back down to London and make my way back to Tarnbrushan.
Now, what was that for? What was happening?
The reason I was recalled was the fact that they were now planning to go to Arnhem. So they needed every base as soon as possible to fly there. And I eventually did go to Arnhem.
So that's why they called you back so early?
That's why they called me back, yeah.
What was there any particular emergency training? You were going to go on the 17th of September. Was there any prior training to that? I mean, you were always in training, but, you know.
No, nothing special, except that we got a terrific briefing from the RAF intelligence officers. We went into the room, and they had got a plan of the whole of the Arnhem area. Photographic plans of the whole of the area, and we were told which part we got to, which section of the landing zone we got to land in. The idea was that if you had, say, troops from one unit and three or four gliders, you didn't want them landing all over the place, you wanted them together so that they could form a squad. And my glider...
Now, you weren't in a Hamilcar now, were you?
No, I was in a
Hamilcar. Why not? What had happened?
I don't know. I don't know why I was. We were just detailed. I expect it to be detailed for a hamburger. It wasn't as detailed for a horse.
They were using hammer cars.
Oh, yes, they were using hammer cars, yes.
But you weren't. Now, what was your load?
I got a Jeep, a medical trailer full of medical supplies, a doctor from the RAMC, Lieutenant Randall of the RAMC, a military doctor, and about three or four men from the Royal Artillery. That was my load.
So your main load was this Lieutenant Randall and the medical jeep?
Yes, medical jeep.
Did you speak to Randall? It's Derek Randall, isn't it?
Derek Randall, yeah.
What was he like?
He was a lieutenant. Now, normally doctors in the army are captains. So it appears to me he was just probably graduated from medical school and he hadn't quite reached the rank of a captain, which means that he was just recently made pass as a doctor. But I remember speaking to him once during the flight to Army. Came and had a word. He came up and spoke to myself, my co-pilot, and I didn't see him till later on in the battle.
Now, what do you remember? So, what about the preparations for taking off in your Horsa? What do you remember of that? I know we've done some of this before, but how would you get ready? For instance, what flying kit would you be wearing? What would you actually wear from your underpants up, really?
Well, instead of your battle tunic, you wore an airborne smock, camouflage smock, and you wore boots, and not flying boots, just your boots, your normal army boots, your flu, khaki trousers, camouflage smock, your red beret, but you had your helmet on to put on when you landed. That was the uniform we went in.
And what kit? What weapons?
I had a Sten gun. Wally had a Sten gun. And a
any other weapon?
No, I just had the Sten guns.
Now, so what happened when you went out to the airport? It was a mass takeoff, was it? Well, tell me about that. Do you remember that takeoff? I know you did so many, but this is the one where you actually went into action. Do you remember the mass takeoff from Tarrant Rushton? Well, it was Tarrant Rushton you took off.
Yeah, Tarrant Rushton. It was as I previously described, a mass takeoff, where the gliders were lined up one behind the other, and the aircraft parked on either side, and they took off alternately. And to us, it was just a normal, a bit more exciting because we didn't know where it was going to end. But apart from that, it was just quite a normal takeoff. But we.
Now, were you nervous at all? How did you feel in here? Were you scared or
no,
excited?
Everybody thought it was going to be easy. Everybody thought it was going to be easy. The briefing we got, they told us there was only second-rate German troops based in the area. We had no problem with them. That turned out not to be true. We were all quite happy about it.
Now, what do you remember about the flight out?
Well, the first thing, we had a rendezvous over Auburn, Suffolk. There were so many FEs involved that we all rendezvoused over Auburn, Suffolk at a specific time. So when we took off from Tarrant Rushton, we didn't fly straight to Auburn, otherwise we were in there too early. So we did a circuitous route all around the south of England and then rendezvoused with the rest of the gliders at Auburn, Suffolk.
Now, you were towed by a Halifax?
A Halifax, yes.
Anything you remember about the flight so far? So just routine to Aldeburgh, was it?
To Aldeburgh. Just routine.
Aldeburgh, sorry.
And there was one tragedy. A horse had been towed from another aerodrome near to us, crashed near Bristol, and the whole crew of Royal Engineers were being carried and the two pilots were killed. That was the first casualty of Arnhem, happened near Bristol. That I think the tow rope broke or something. And it may have been that it was one of the Royal Engineers perhaps priming a bomb or doing something, but it suddenly blew up. And it crashed and they were all killed.